Hello, I'm Dr. Roger Steiner, director of the Gavin Herbert Eye Institute at the University of California, Irvine. By Skype, I have today with us two distinguished panelists, Dr. Steve Lane and Dr. Tom Samuelson, and we're going to be speaking about some of the highlights of the just concluded annual meeting of the American Society of Cataract and Refractive Surgery. Steve, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks, Roger, for having me. My name is Stephen Lane. I'm from St. Paul, Minnesota, where I practice cornea and external disease, as well as refractive surgery and cataract surgery as my interests.
Welcome, Steve. And Tom?
My name's Tom Samuelson. I'm a glaucoma anterior segment surgeon in Minneapolis, right across the river from Steve. I have a practice at Minnesota Eye Consultants, and I also teach residents through the University of Minnesota program. I'm on clinical faculty at Hennepin County Medical Center.
Terrific, terrific. Well, thank you both for taking the time to join Medscape. And ASCRS was filled with lots of exciting and new areas. Obviously, one of the big ones that's still out there, I'll start with Steve, is the femtosecond laser for cataract surgery. Steve, what do you think is going on here? Is this still growing? Is it guaranteed to be taking over? Any negatives that you're hearing?
Well, Roger, it's obviously a very controversial subject, but certainly the interest continues to grow almost exponentially. We now have a number of different laser platforms available, and I think that's probably the most new and exciting thing that physicians now have a choice to choose between four different lasers in the United States. We're starting to see some results. I think that the applicability and the adjustability of many of the features are continuing to increase. The technology continues to evolve even in the very short period of time. We're seeing an increased number of procedures and an increased amount of interest. Certainly, there's healthy skepticism and a lot of debate going on that's still very active. Cost probably remains probably the most significant barrier to the uptick of this technology. But we're starting to see how we can get better results with it in complicated cases, for example, that are now being utilized. So again, it remains a very exciting field. It continues to evolve and change, and it's one of those things that I think will be the future, as I believe everybody predicts, but we need to get a little bit better handle on the financial aspects of it and under most circumstances for it to continue to gain even wider spread applicability.
I would agree with all of that, and I was interested that although complications are not non-existent with femto, they seem to be running at about the same level as conventional surgery, even for very skilled surgeons using conventional ultrasound. So I think we're kind of moving past that, and I thought that we were getting a lot more presentations just on little technical issues and refinements. And certainly at the on the exhibit floor, the activity at the booths of the four current manufacturers was very high, and it sounds like Zimmer is about to enter the market as well. So pretty soon we may have a fifth platform.
Yes, I certainly agree with that, Roger. And what we're starting to see as well is this becoming a much more portable type of technology too. The sort of buy it and have it stand in your center or in your ASC alone, I think, is evolving as well. And a number of different companies are putting their lasers mobile so that they do travel around, and I think we're seeing that as an increasingly useful modality for people to get experience with this and make a decision or not that they want to actually purchase this or continue to use it in a mobile fashion coming off of a van, and that seems to be working very, very well for many.
And that certainly, I would agree, would be a I think a somewhat of a game changer because it'll make it more affordable and as well as more accessible. And now, Tom, I think equal to the femto mania is the MIGS mania. The whole meeting was filled with the buzz over the innovations in glaucoma surgery. What's your take on all of this?
Yeah, I agree, Roger. In many respects, it was a home run meeting for glaucoma in general and MIGS in particular. A home run in general because Rick Lewis is a glaucoma specialist. One of our glaucoma brethren was honored with the presidency of ASCRS. And at MIGS in the surgical section on glaucoma day, we had nearly 1,000 people in the room, which for glaucoma at an ASCRS meeting is pretty impressive. And then, of course, nothing more mainstream ASCRS than the Binkhorst lecture. And Ike Ahmed gave a fantastic talk on MIGS. So I think MIGS had a huge coming out party at ASCRS, and it's really great to see.
So, so far all of the MIGS surgery has involved the combination with cataract surgery. And yet, we know that traditionally most glaucoma surgery has been separate from cataract surgery. Are these micro techniques going to make their way into non-cataract surgery applications?
I think they will, but it'll probably continue to be centered around cataract surgery. In the past, we've decoupled cataract and glaucoma surgery a little bit because once we learned that clear corneal phaco emulsification lowered pressure by itself and retained all surgical glaucoma options, we stopped doing phacoemulsectomy, for example, except for cases of extremely advanced disease. So we were doing phaco alone for many years, but now that MIGS has evolved, we're using the phaco platform to provide an adjunct procedure by adding on a MIGS plus type procedure, whether it be iStent or trabectome or ECP for that matter. But iStent seems to have all the attention right now and gaining a lot of momentum, and there was just tremendous interest at ASCRS. I personally taught 3 courses on MIGS technology and with an emphasis on iStent, and I know there are other courses as well. So there's just tremendous interest, and it really does lend itself to be done in conjunction with cataract surgery. The really nice methodology we have in treating glaucoma these days is we can take advantage of our newer laser platforms, our improved pharmacology, and we can manage most glaucoma until the time that they get a visually significant cataract, and then we can help manage both problems at the same time. It doesn't cure glaucoma. I want to make sure that people don't think that glaucoma has been cured and we can move on to a different disease now. Glaucoma, still, we have a lot of work to do still, but the benefit of iStent in particular is the safety. The safety profile of iStent in the USPMA trial was not measurably different than cataract surgery alone at 2 years. No difference in visual outcomes and no difference in adverse events between cataract surgery alone and cataract plus iStent. So that safety benefit is enormous. And so now that we can perform a glaucoma procedure at the time of cataract surgery and not affect the visual outcomes of cataract surgery, not affect the refractive outcomes of cataract surgery, and lower intraocular pressure and reduce the need for medications, that's just a great advance. And the reality is our more advanced surgical procedures, such as filtration surgery and our aqueous drainage devices, are getting better and safer as well. But the big advance at ASCRS this year was the tremendous interest in this new category we call MIGS.
Well, it's certainly, as you said, any course, any discussion, any symposium involving MIGS was jammed. As a cornea-oriented person, I have increasingly been thinking of glaucoma drops as toxins because we see more and more cases, not just of allergy, which is bad enough from a patient's point of view, but actual limbal stem cell deficiency and sometimes almost intractable surface damage. When you talk to a patient about who's on glaucoma medication about the MIGS option, my experience so far has been that that is about a 30-second discussion, and then they leap into it right away because they don't like the drops either. Steve, you're a cornea specialist. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, exactly the same as yours, Roger. I mean, the discussion with patients is pretty simple and straightforward. If you say there's a pretty good chance that we might be able to get rid of one or more of your drops, they're all over that. And the other important thing from an external disease standpoint is just the whole concept of dry eye and the problems that arise from glaucoma medications with regard to dry eye symptoms as they relate to the ocular surface too. So being able to reduce that toxic load to the surface is very important as well.
Absolutely. So we're all in agreement on that. Shifting back to the cataract side of things, Steve, Warren Hill gave the Innovators Lecture on his work toward improving the accuracy of the formula for calculating IOLs, and then the ASARS website has been privileged to bring on Graham Barrett's latest update on his formula. Can you give us some comments on that?
Sure. With regard to Graham Barrett's toric calculator, it's now available on the ASCRS website. And if you just go to the drop-down on the online tools, you'll find it there. And what's different about this formula compared to some of the others that are on there is that the posterior corneal astigmatism estimation is automatically added to this formula, so the outcomes have lined up really nicely with my initial experience with Doug Koch's posterior corneal astigmatism algorithm, which I think has been found to be very, very accurate and invaluable. There's some other options on it, too, that the listeners can explore, but I would certainly invite them to visit. This is a powerful new formula. And then, you know, Roger, in keeping with the whole idea of trying to improve outcomes, Warren gave, you know, his typical and intellectual experience, as always, that sort of went through his current thinking on the various algorithms and some of the things that he's doing to try and improve on the outcomes of the formulas in terms of looking at probabilities and matching this with the algorithms themselves. And so with the addition of this, he's able to actually improve his outcomes in some of the early results. And I have no doubt that Warren will continue this work and help us all achieve better results through formulas alone. So we're seeing this nice sort of secret storm where the technology itself is improving with such things that allow us to get better results like intraoperative aberrometry, which again was a very big topic at this meeting, and some of the guidance devices that are available to us from some of the companies to help us put toric intraocular lenses and LRIs on alignment. And then with the improvements of sort of the indirect measurements with the formulas, I think we're getting a better and better handle all the time on kind of reaching that holy grail of improving results in cataract surgery so they can mimic what we've been able to do with corneal refractive surgery.
Certainly true. The overall market information that we get, but also the surveys of the audience at ASCRS seem to indicate that while the adoption of the multifocal and accommodating IOLs is relatively flat, the adoption and incorporation of astigmatism correction is growing at a very rapid rate, 2-3% a year typically. And anytime there was a discussion about astigmatism and especially accuracy of placement of the lens, there was a lot of audience interest because it's a great technology. And again, kind of like MIGS, I think, Tom, it allows a patient to experience something better and really improve the quality of their life as overall, as well as the quality of their optics and their eyes. So we think that maybe we're hearing more interesting material again about some potential new pharmaceuticals as well. And Tom, what did you hear about some pharmaceuticals at the meeting?
I think while we're still a few years away, there's increasing momentum in new drug delivery systems, whether they're a depot injection or impregnated drug delivery within punctal plugs. There's interest in improving the way we administer medication. So that would be a terrific combination to have, you know, safer surgical procedures. But then, while these procedures are safer, they're not quite as efficacious as filtration surgery, for example. So what we're hoping is that we can do procedures that are extremely safe, but then couple them with drug delivery that can reduce the burden of the everyday topical administration that we've always had to use. As you mentioned earlier, we're seeing surface toxicity with some of the complex drug regimens. So if we can avoid having to daily administer 2, 3, 4 times a day with complex drug regimens and give a month or 2 month or 3 month duration delivery system, that would be a huge advance. And there's evidence to suggest we may experience a pharmacological renaissance within the next few years, similar to the surgical renaissance we're seeing right now.
You know, the drug delivery system concept in terms of a steady state of a low dose as opposed to pulse delivery, which is what we largely do with drops, may lead to some very interesting new results. And frankly, I don't know yet. Is it better to have pulses of high levels, or is it better to have a low-level steady state on some of these things, particularly anti-inflammatories? It will be interesting to see, but it certainly would help compliance to have a drug delivery that didn't rely on patients with drops. Steve, you know, you and I have talked about some of the other new options, intraoperative pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, that's another very exciting area as well, Roger. Just to back up one small thing, that, you know, with regard to what Tom was talking about, the whole field of nanotechnology is really taking off as well. And to be able to deliver smaller amounts of drops that are absorbed so much better and not necessarily through the cornea is also something that's, I think, of great interest and a great potential on the horizon to go along with the sort of renaissance Tom was talking about. But we intraoperatively, you know, I think off-label, many of us for many years have used different medications either in our BSS bottle or directly into the eye for both anesthetic effects as well as maintenance of pupillary mydriasis. And there are a number of pharmaceutical agents that are sort of going through the process of FDA approval now that may be approved and be able to be injected into the bottle that will improve both pain and mydriasis intraoperatively with a product that will be commercially. And so once again, it'll take away that whole sort of off-label use that sometimes can be problematic in terms of TAS and other infectious causes that may appear as a result of compounding and the compounding portion right out of it. So again, another exciting area that mixes this time pharmacology with what we're doing surgically.
Shifting slightly, you know, we've been hearing a lot about the hoped for availability pretty soon of the AcuFocus camera pinhole intracorneal inlay for presbyopia. And there's, in addition, other areas of presbyopia. We're hearing about a new generation of multifocal and extended depth of focus intraocular lenses that seems to be on the horizon. And we're hearing about the Revision Optics Raindrop intracorneal inlay. But one that I think was less expected on the drug side was the idea of having a meiotic agent that would also create the equivalent of a pinhole aperture, but one that does not have the spasm of accommodation and the potential pain that pilocarpine has.
Yeah, you know, it was just sort of talked about, Roger, in its initiation. A lot of detail wasn't given out about it, but your description is really right on target. And, you know, if that's the case and we can improve and essentially cure presbyopia with an eye drop, that's more than a renaissance. That's a revolution at that point. And I think that that holds some really very interesting promise. It does have some limitations. As they're reporting on at the drop lab, about 8 hours, so it's certainly not acute. Conjunctival injection, a little discomfort upon installation as well with some stinging, but it certainly would make an interesting adjunct to our armamentarium of how we cover the correction of my presbyopia for 8 hours a day with a single drop. I personally would be all over that.
Yeah, get those glasses off you there, Steve. So
exactly.
And the last thing I just wanted to touch bases on is cross-linking. We've been hearing about corneal cross-linking for keratoconus for a decade out of Europe, and this hope that we'll finally see FDA approval this year of the basic application. But I was intrigued by increasing information about selective application of cross-linking for optical reasons, perhaps correction of astigmatism or correcting some of the irregularity in keratoconus. But the one that, you know, as I heard a little bit about last year in Europe, and now this was a fairly good amount at ASCRS, including part of at the Innovators Talk, was the use of the combination of riboflavin and ultraviolet for the treatment of infectious keratitis.
Very exciting, Roger. Certainly, just like glaucoma has continued to show tremendous advances, cornea, when you look back over the last several years, first with DSEC and DALK, and now with cross-linking, is very exciting. Certainly, we would all love to have in our hands the ability to cross-link patients with some of the ectasias and keratoconus, pellucid, those kinds of patients who are sort of doomed to either long-term contact lens wear or surgery down the line. If there was an ability to be able to halt that, and as cross-linking has shown, it will be able to do. What a wonderful thing to patients and to be able to take care of them much younger. But I agree, this area in terms of infectious keratitis, especially severe, sometimes recalcitrant infectious keratitis, to be able to halt that, to kill those bugs right on the spot, supplement it with the topical, would be a breakthrough and would probably save many corneas. So once again, look forward to the studies and information coming out about that, but certainly very exciting. And like so many things, it just makes sense. It makes sense why it would work and how it would work. And now it's just a matter of us proving it so that we can have it at our disposal here in the U.S.
Agree. Well, I'd like to thank Dr. Tom Samuelson and Dr. Stephen Lane for giving us their time. This has been a great discussion, touching on really just a few of the hundreds of exciting areas that were incorporated into the annual meeting of ASCRS in Boston that we just concluded. On behalf of Medscape Ophthalmology, thank you very much for listening.